particularly across the north and the west of the UK. However, some brightness will develop again across the east, and it'll feel mild with temperatures ranging from 8 to 11 degrees. On Friday, it'll turn windy with a spell of rain and showers spreading south across the country. It'll also start to turn cooler with showers turning wintry across Scotland later on Friday. And by the time we reach the weekend, it'll be cooler for all, but drier with some sunshine.
Thanks, Steph. Now, Henry Goodman continues our Book of the Week. François Mitterrand was the son of a station master at Angoulême in Cognac country. But when he was 3 years old, the family moved to the nearby town of Jarnac so that his father could take over the family business, manufacturing vinegar.
Mitterrand's father, Joseph, was an undemonstrative man. He loved his children, but as one of his grandchildren commented, he kept everything inside. The Mitterrand children absorbed the values their elders taught them. Be discreet, and in all circumstances endeavor to control your emotions. The family was markedly right-wing, nostalgic for the empire, yet open-minded. Behind the decorous, old-fashioned facade, it was in some ways a rather modern household. No child was ever beaten. They could go to bed when they liked. François remembered, "It was the opposite of strict. I never had to rebel." His brothers recalled a different François, who slid down banisters and stubbornly held his finger a millimetre away from an object he'd been forbidden to touch, insisting that he wasn't doing anything wrong. To the old aristocracy of Jarnac, the family were outsiders. Mitterrand's grandfather, Papa Jules, had arrived from Ruillac, all of 10 miles away, a mere half-century earlier. Worse, the family was Catholic, in a region dominated by Protestants. When François's older sisters tried to join the local tennis club, the Calvinist pastor protested, "It isn't right that Catholics be allowed to play there." According to Jacques, the Mitterrands responded in kind. "My grandmother never set foot in a Protestant house, and no Protestant ever darkened her door." In Jarnac, the cognac business was what counted, and it was in the hands of Protestant families. The vinaigriers were a notch down from the cognaciers. Jacques recalled, "We were neither Protestant nor in the cognac trade. We were unclassifiable." His sister-in-law agreed. In Jarnac, there were the Mitterrand, and then there was everyone else. Mitterrand's friend, François Dalle, was convinced that these caste divisions had a lasting influence. He was exasperated by those young crétins from the Cognac family. They could not pass their baccalaureate, they were hopeless, yet they lived like high flyers. His father had a little vinegar manufacture with a dozen employees. There was no comparison with the immense wealth of the cognac trade, but the intellectual superiority of the Mitterrand was obvious. The fatuousness of the moneyed bourgeoisie annoyed him, and he felt it more strongly as he got older. At the age of 18, Mitterrand set out for university in Paris, enrolling both at the Faculty of Law and the Faculty of Letters at the Sorbonne, while also studying to become a diplomat. It wasn't unusual at that time to take more than one degree, but literature, law, and politics were a high-powered combination. His friend Jacques Benet remembered, "Those who did that were a kind of elite." François Dalle, with whom he went to the law faculty library each morning, was less impressed. Mitterrand didn't work much. Instead of studying legal problems, he used to read the newspaper. But he too recognized that the young Mitterrand had unbelievable culture, and politics intrigued him. In later life, Mitterrand would be accused of having, as a student, been close to the extreme right, which in pre-war France was profoundly anti-Semitic. That the young Mitterrand had anti-Semitic acquaintances is not in doubt. In Paris in the 1930s, it was almost impossible not to. But there's no evidence of him having been actively anti-Semitic himself. On the contrary, He and a friend intervened during a fracas at a cafe in the Latin Quarter to help a Jewish law student being taunted by a group of young toughs from Action Française. The student, Georges Dayan, was from a long-established family of left-wing Jewish intellectuals, and he and François became fast friends. Mitterrand dealt with the diversity of his fellow human beings by appreciating their qualities and putting their faults in a box. It left him open to charges of lack of principle, and it brought him some strange friendships. But it enabled him to maintain an eclectic range of contacts with men and women whose ideas and attitudes were very different from his own. He found himself more and more torn between his milieu, which was right-wing, and what he later described as a sort of instinct of opposition. His brother Jacques said tartly, shortly before his death, "The trouble with François was that he was always opposing something." In 1938, François fell head over heels in love with a young girl he spotted at a dance. Marie-Louise Terras looked much older, but in fact was only 14. Over the next 3.5 years, he would write her some 2,000 impassioned and often desperate love letters. She was much less sure of her feelings. But war was looming. François was assigned to an infantry regiment just outside Paris, together with his best friend, Georges Dayan. "To find yourself under the control of the NCOs with minds as nimble as a battering ram doesn't make you particularly enthusiastic." To François Dahl, it was one more factor added to the arrogance of the cognacier in Jarnac, which would lead François later to break with the bourgeoisie. "His superiors were imbeciles. His experience of the army made him furious." When the Second World War began, Mitterrand and his comrades were sent to the front. In the spring of 1940, during a spell of leave, he finally managed to put an engagement ring on the finger of Marie-Louise, though she confided to her brother that she still had doubts. Then, in April, François was sent to a forward position near the Belgian border. After twice being awarded the Croix de Guerre for bravery under fire, he was wounded by shrapnel and captured, ending up in a POW camp at Ziegenhain in what would later become East Germany. Speaking long afterwards, Mitterrand remembered his captivity as
a great revelation. The biggest shock was when I suddenly realized that the society in which I found myself in the camp bore absolutely no relation to the hierarchy I had known in my youth. The hierarchy of decoration, diplomas, money is worth nothing. The scale of true values is different.
His friend Georges Beauchamp filled in what was between the lines. He realized that those from his own class, the notable, the bourgeoisie, often didn't behave very well, and those with humbler origins behaved better. To those who knew Mitterrand in captivity, there was something about him that was hard to pin down. He inspired respect, one remembered, and made it a point of honor to respect others. Eventually, at his third attempt, Mitterrand managed to escape, but the France to which he returned in December 1941 was divided. The Germans were in occupation in Paris and the north. In the south, the Vichy administration held sovereignty in name only. Moreover, there were two claimants to the role of national savior: an unknown general named Charles de Gaulle, who was in exile in London, and the First World War hero Marshal Pétain, now 80 years old. Where did Mitterrand stand politically? He didn't know himself. Afterwards, history was reshaped to portray the Vichy administration and all who worked for it as dyed-in-the-wool collaborators. That was not how it looked at the time. The United States, Australia, Canada, and some 30 other countries recognized Pétain's government. Mitterrand had friends in Vichy who could help him find a job. For an escaped prisoner, the free zone was the safest place to be. Pétain seemed the least bad option, the man most likely to preserve whatever there was left to be preserved from the cataclysm of defeat. Vichy was a genteel, slightly faded spa, where the bourgeoisie of pre-war days had come to take the waters. Mitterrand loathed it. He obtained a post at a documentation centre attached to the French Veterans Legion, where his boss was a First World War flying ace named Favre de Tiron. Officially, they were charged with tracking down Gaullists, communists and other hostile elements, but they also served as cover for a clandestine operation to launch the first military resistance networks. Mitterrand's job was to compile deliberately misleading dossiers on potential suspects. He said, "It was all doctored. Favre told me, I want you to falsify everything. So we wrote complete rubbish." His first months in Vichy were a time for reflection and self-questioning. Already, as a prisoner at Ziegenhain, and now, in a letter to his cousin, he asked, "How can we get France back on its feet?" Mitterrand saw two possible ways. One was to support Pétain, the other was to resist. For the next year, he led a double life. On one side, an official career surrounded by right-wing friends. On the other, an unofficial and increasingly clandestine existence working with fellow ex-prisoners against the Germans and their French allies. But in 1943, Mitterrand's balancing act became too difficult to continue. That winter, de Gaulle appointed him to lead a resistance movement of former POWs. A tract, the following summer, set out its goals. Disorganize the enemy's communications. Sabotage the railways. Derail trains and cut the tracks. Hunt down the killers who are massacring Frenchmen for the Boche. Civil servants, sabotage the orders of the Vichy. Let the great voice of vengeance and justice ring out against the barbarous foreigner who wanted to enslave our land. Conditions, however, were becoming more and more dangerous. The Gestapo staged a succession of raids against resistance safe houses. Several of Mitterrand's inner circle were arrested and sent to concentration camps. Those who knew him that year were struck by his cold-blooded recklessness. He wore a light blue English suit, purchased in London, at a time when anything English raised a red flag of suspicion. He smoked English cigarettes which smelt distinctively different from the dark tobacco of Gauloise and Gitane. The writer Marguerite Duras found him carefree to the point of folly. Philippe Deschartres, another of the movement's leaders, recalled, "He had no nerves. He was at home in the resistance. He was in the place where he should be." In his way, Mitterrand was prudent. He frequently changed his appearance and constantly changed his address, staying sometimes with friends from his Jarnac days, at others with the writer Marguerite Duras and the ménage à trois which she maintained with her husband and her lover. Another hideout was the home of a film producer named Christine Gouze. Mitterrand noticed a framed photograph of a young woman on the piano. By then, Marie-Louise had long since broken off their engagement, and though not entirely cured of his passion for her, Mitterrand was an eligible young bachelor again. The girl in the photograph was Christine's sister, Danielle, then 19 years old. Family legend has it that he declared forthwith, "I shall marry her." And he did, setting in motion an improbable roller coaster of a partnership which would continue against all odds for the next 50 years.
Henry Goodman has been reading Mitterrand by Philip Short. The programme was abridged and produced by Jane Marshall Productions for BBC Radio 4. BBC Radio 4. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 today, Wednesday, the 27th of November. There are warnings of gales in Fitzroy, Bailey, Faroes and southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. High Shannon, 1042, slow moving, declining 1039 by 1800 Wednesday. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking, north at zero, south at zero. Westerly, veering northwesterly later, 5 to 7, perhaps gale 8 later. Rain or drizzle, showers later, moderate or poor, becoming good. 40s, Cromarty, west 5 or 6, veering northwest 5 to 7 later, occasional drizzle, good, occasionally moderate. 4th, Tyne, Dogger, west, veering northwest later, 5 or 6, occasional drizzle, good.